We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states. And the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live, in-game odds on every major sports, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com to start winning. On today's episode of the Pride Podcast, we have our final review for the Detroit Lions versus Chicago Bears. We're going to give our final thoughts on the game and talk about some things that we liked about this game and some stuff we didn't like about this game. Also, when Taylor Decker comes back, should he be the starting left tackle? And we also give our 4-week observation of quarterback Jared Goff, all on episode 198. Of the Pride Podcast.
Blue Wire. With the 7th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Detroit Lions select Penei Sewell, tackle, Oregon.
He's going to run it straight in! Jared Goff!
Yes! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! T.J. Hawkins, yes! They did it! They tied it! They're an extra point away from winning this game! Oh, baby, how big is that?
Yo, what is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Pride Podcast, episode 198 on the Blue Wire Network. I am your host, Tyler. No Pierre with us today, but my man Malcolm is here with us today. Malcolm, how you doing today, man?
Woo! Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
That woo was just... It describes so many things that's just happening. And you guys are all probably thinking it was the Lions game yesterday. And, like, that's part of it. But, like, you guys don't know the technical difficulties that's been happening of us trying to start this episode for the last, I don't know, however long. I mean, it started off with, laptop difficulties on my end. Laptop not turning on. Laptop still not turning on. So I gave up on that. So we're on the cellular device today. This is like our third attempt right now, or fourth attempt trying to record right now. And
take three, action.
Yeah, and they say third time's a charm, right? So
yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, second time Malcolm gets kicked out of the call. It's been a day, but we're here. We're here to talk some Lions football.
Yep.
Let's just get into it, man. I'm sick of all the other shit. Let's just talk about some Lions football, man. I'm ready.
Yeah, man. I'm ready, too.
All right. This is, the more calm and collective episode. If you guys want more anger, instant reaction, you guys can go listen to the last episode, because that's exactly what it was. It was an episode right after the game, instantly right after the game, and you're getting pure raw emotions. You're getting me and Malcolm cussing out analytics. Everything's in there. So if you guys are into raw emotions, that is your type of episode. If you want more, thought out process episodes, this is your type of episode. So we know more. We know more about some injuries that occurred during the game. We've had the time to go back and watch some of the game. Malcolm's gone back and rewatched the whole game. So, you know, like I said, just more thought out process. So I want to start off with some injuries in this game and a significant injury that the Lions incurred during this game. And that's outside linebacker Romeo Okwara, the man they got paid this offseason. He has suffered a torn Achilles and will be sidelined for the rest of the 2021 season. And that's just a major blow. And then also another injury, another crucial player who got paid this offseason by the Detroit Lions, center Frank Ragnow. Not as significant as Romeo Okwara's injury, but is expected to miss this game this Sunday versus the Minnesota Vikings with a turf toe. And you guys know Frank Ragnow. He is a soldier, so he doesn't very miss many games. So it is a bit shocking that he is missing a football game because, I mean, that man, it takes a lot for him to miss football games. So, Malcolm, you know, just quickly, how big of a blow, especially with Romeo Okwara missing the rest of the season?
Damn. I mean, that's all I have to say right now is damn. I mean, this sucks. Romeo Okwara, you know, this is a big blow for the Lions defense, especially off the edge. You know, he was, you know, our leading pressure guy, creating pressures. Now, the sack numbers may not be there because, he has some opportunities, but the pressure, him pressuring this year has been very, very, very good, and he'll be missed, man. I mean, hopefully, you know, we do have – the thing is about the outside linebackers, I kind of do like our depth there. We have Austin Bryant, who most likely will be filling in that role. And then you want to see some mixed packages with Julian Okoro. So that's something to look forward to. You know, now we're going to get to see some of our younger guys. I know during the presser, Dan Campbell did say that they should be getting Trey Flowers back soon, Tyler's guy. So maybe we'll see if maybe Trey Flowers could fill that role and probably do what Romeo was doing. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about him in a little bit later in this episode, but Charles Harris is the guy we should talk about a little bit more, man. I mean.
Oh, that's right. Charles Harris as well. I mean, yeah, it all depends on what's going on with Trey Flowers. You know, I was already thinking that Charles Harris is on the other side. But, yeah, Charles Harris might be the guy on the other side as well. So you're just going to see a mixture of the three. I think the big thing that is going to hurt us is Frank Ragnow being out.
Yeah, I mean, it's depending on the timeline. I don't know how long or lengthy the timeline is going to be with the Frank Ragnow. I know for as of right now, it's this week. I just don't expect him to miss too much time. I just don't because the man is just – he's so tough, man. He played with a fractured throat for multiple weeks. I mean, that's just unbelievable. The man is unbelievable.
He's an Iron Man.
He is, so. But, yeah, the Romeo Okwara injury definitely stinks. But it's going to open up some playing time for these younger players, and one of them being his brother, Julian Okwara. So, you hope that these guys could capitalize with the injury, and, you know, it's the next man up, mentality right now. But the Lions have taken some big blows on defense this year, man. Starting off with Jeff Okuda. And then now Romeo Okwara, you lost Ifeatu Melifonwu week two. These were some young guys that you want to see take that next step of their career and, you know, look at to be some building blocks for your team going forward. And, you know, to kind of stunt what they were doing, it sucks. So, you know, just add Romeo Okwara to the list.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into the game itself now. All right, now we rewatch the game. Last week, you gave me a little more of a positive outlook of when you rewatched the game. You saw some good things that you maybe didn't see with the initial eye test. Do you got any of that this week?
I actually have some positives. After rewatching the game, I mean, this is some stuff that I kind of noticed the first game, but I was so damn mad with these third and short, third and ones, fourth and ones, third and two plays that I lost track and didn't get to, you know, highlight some of the positives with this game. Now, as far as, I guess, our running game, when they do show that they do want to run the ball, our running game is there. And Jamal Williams was pretty much automatic in getting 4 to 5 yards per carry. And he's he was definitely a bright spot on offense. Now, also, I will also say, a lot of people are going to probably be mad about this, but even though Jared Goff missed some throws, the throws that he was able to make, some of the throws he was able to make in the game was, you know, there were some positive throws he made in that game. Like there was a big time throw he made where he kind of, you know, he moved around the pocket and when the pocket collapsed, and then he found Cephas down the middle field for like a 20-yard gain. I mean, there were some plays. He did miss a lot as well. But, man, on the defensive side, it's really hard to get positives from this game. Like, I couldn't find anything on the defense side of the ball that I could say, okay, that area worked. It was just bad.
I would only say I was going to say maybe Charles Harris. He had that really big sack and got the fumble.
He did.
They didn't recover. But, like, that was a huge play of the game.
He did. That was one of the few times. One of the few times they were able to get to the quarterback. And then when I went back and noticed is that they tried. You would think, you know, watching the first time, you're like, why are the Lions not blitzing? You
know, why? A little bit.
They did. And the thing with the Chicago Bears is that they picked the blitz up really, really, really good. It's like, it feels like Matt Nagy. And I know everybody's giving him a hard time, but he executed the perfect game plan for Justin Fields to have a successful second week game. He executed a perfect game plan. The amount of like the protection they had up front, he wasn't leaving them in no 5-man protection. You were seeing 6-7 guys up front, you know, creating these walls for Justin Fields, and they had an excellent game plan. You know, they win this game saying, "Look, we're gonna pound the rock." And when the opportunity is there, we're going to, you know, max protect Justin Fields so he can find these guys. Because, you know, when you're looking at Detroit Lions, you're looking, you know, after our front seven, our secondary is really shaky, especially in coverage. Our zones and our secondary is really shaky. If you give a quarterback time, more than likely he's going to find a wide open receiver. So it looks like the Bears came in that game plan. Look, they said, "Look, we're not gonna put too much pressure on Justin Fields. We're gonna run the rock, and you know when the shots are there, we're gonna take our shots."
Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. But yeah, I agree with you. AG, I thought, did the best of his ability to try and get to the quarterback. Like I agree with you. I saw that even with the initial eye test, I thought there was that play when the Bears really backed up, you know, on their own. I want to say like 10-yard line. It was a third down. AG brings the house and almost
pick it up.
Not that one. I'm saying it was third down, and they almost sacked Justin Fields, but he ended up throwing the ball away to the sideline. I don't know if you remember that play.
That's the one that Worley came on the blitz.
Yep. Daryl Worley was there. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that play. They tried. Even like we're sending 5 guys at him, like. That they picked it up really, really, really good. So they executed a perfect game plan. I mean, you have a rookie quarterback who struggled. What do? You limit his attempts. You only threw 17 passes, guys. Yeah, like when everybody say, "Oh, you know, we let rookie quarterbacks destroy us." I wouldn't say that Justin Fields destroyed us.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Justin Fields destroyed. He didn't throw any touchdowns. He threw one pick.
He threw like only 200 some yards too. It wasn't like
he. Yeah, the way a lot of Lions fans were reacting was like, "Oh, here we go again. We'll let a, you know, does the guy look like Mitch? Oh, this kid didn't look like Mitch."
I mean, he hit a couple big hitters, obviously.
I mean, like
Darnell Mooney and, you know, a couple of A-Rob, but
that's the game plan. That was their game plan. They went in this week and said, "Look, we're gonna run the rock." I mean, David Montgomery, damn near he got out the fourth quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. But before he got out, he had 23 rushing attempts. If he never got hurt, he probably would have had damn near 30 rushing attempts in this game. But that was their game plan. They were going to run this rock. When the shots are there, we're going to max protect. And with this line in secondary, if you max protect and you give a quarterback time, they're going to find a receiver in our zone. It's just going to happen. Like our corners are not that good to hold up. I mean, that's why you, at least every game, you see a wide open receiver. So this kudos, I mean, the Bears did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some, I would say, more positive out of the defense in the second half. Like, I just thought, I mean, they did what they could do. I mean, they did what they had and what they could do. So I didn't, I wasn't too disappointed with the defense itself, too, honestly. So I'm with you. I mean, Justin Fields had his moments. He had some big hitters, and you give credit to Justin Fields. He improved as the game went on, and you know, I think like we saw what he could be in the NFL, and that's nice. But you know, I agree with you. Justin Fields didn't light up the day. I put it more on the Lions offense again, and why they lost this game more than I put it on the Lions defense. I mean, the Lions defense in the second half, I mean, it is their job for most of the part. How many points did they give up? They gave up the touchdown. What was the score going to halftime? I don't remember. Was it 21-0 or was it 14-0? 14-0. And then they got a touchdown early in the third quarter, right?
Yeah, because I believe, if I can remember right.
So we started with the ball. We had the
ball first.
And then I think the Bears marched down the field afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, that's what happened. But they were just running it down our throats, man. It got to the point that we just couldn't stop their running game. And this is, and as far as the Lions, and just talking about, you know, just judging what I've seen these first four games, I would say, I don't believe the Lions have an identity right now. I really believe they don't know if they want to be a passing team, a running team, or balance. I mean, right now, I can't say they're balanced because they haven't been balanced.
Yeah, it's come to points where they run the ball excessively in the first quarter, and then they'll just abandon that completely and just put it all on Jared Goff. They don't have an identity, and they don't really have an identity on the defense side of the ball. Are they going to get to the quarterback? Are they going to stop the run? Are they going to rely on their secondary? I mean, they're definitely not going to rely on their secondary. We can say that for a fact.
Yeah. I mean, I know people could make an argument and say, well, the reason why they don't have identity is because we've been down every game, and then you have to pass with Jared Goff. I would say that's the case, but even when they actually led in the second half against the Packers, they abandoned, they left, they went away from the running game. The running game disappeared again. So I just don't know. I just can't say that that's the reason why they just I don't know. Like you look at some of these teams, and when you look at Detroit Lions, I don't understand why this team can't be like a Cleveland Browns, as far as offensively. As far as when I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns, and I'm not talking about as far as their receiving weapons. I'm talking about the way they use both of their backs. I just don't get why the Lions can't utilize their backs like that. These guys are just not getting enough carries. And that's just what it boils down to. The most carries each running back received this whole season has been 14. That's been the highest. And then they just go away from that person. I don't know.
So you know what also frustrates me is the use of when they're using these running backs as well. Like, I feel like we're using them at the wrong time. Like, why are we
wrong time?
Why are we abandoning Jamal Williams in the goal line?
I don't understand.
Is that why you paid him?
I don't know. He's 225 pounds.
And he's our big yards. It's not like he's getting stuffed at the scrimmage or he's losing yards. He's getting good plus yards, and then he'll get you down to the red zone, and then they'll bring in DeAndre Swift, who was having a really rough game as far as running the ball.
And this is another thing. Like Dan Campbell said in the offseason, this is what he said in the offseason. We're going to roll with the hot hand. That's what he said. We're going to roll with the hot hand. He said that I'm not looking at who's a starter, who's, you know, 1A, 1B. He said he's not looking at that. He's just going to roll with the hot hand.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this week, our hot hand was Jamal Williams, and he got two carries in the second half.
And that's what I'm saying. You remember I was saying that last episode? It's like they come into this, you know, they come into these weeks with these certain game plans. Like, we're going to get Swift more involved. That's what the whole consensus was before the week. We're going to get Swift more involved in the game. But, like, if he's not doing well, you could still keep Swift in the field and you could still use him in certain places. I'm not saying abandon Swift completely. But to abandon Jamal Williams just because you said you're going to roll with Swift and that was your game plan, you got to roll with how the game is going. Jamal Williams is the better back that game.
Yeah, that game, Jamal Williams clearly was the better. He's averaging almost 5 yards per carry.
Detroit Lions football is finally back.
And there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Detroit Lions tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that all the other ticket sites charges, which let them guarantee the best price on all the NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you find a better price for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in your purchase price. So if you're headed to Minnesota to watch the Detroit Lions take on the Minnesota Vikings, then TickPick got you covered. Visit TickPick.com/PridePodcast today and use promo code PridePodcast to save $10 on your first order of your Detroit Lions tickets.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
And that brings me to my next point. My next issue with the team. And this is going to go to the 31s, third and twos, fourth and ones. I don't get it. Okay. And the reason why I'm saying this is that I don't understand why they're putting the ball in Goff's hands in these moments. Now, I understand that he's your quarterback and you expect your quarterback to make these type of throws. But we've seen time and time again, I mean, this is from week one, week two, week three. We've seen Goff miss these throws. I mean, right now, the Lions on fourth down, they're 3-for-10. They're 3-for-10. Okay, right now, they're 3-for-10 on converting on fourth down. Now, before that, but I mean, if you want to look at the last fourth and one play, they were 3-for-9. So, I mean, analytic guy. What's your percentage on you're 3-for-9 already? Use your percentage. What are the Lions converting these fourth and one plays at least an average percentage? No, they're not. Linux guy. So this is the type of stuff I'm saying. And majority of the time on these plays, they're putting the ball in Goff's hands. I think the last time we've seen Jamal Williams get a carry on a fourth and one or third and one, you have to go to week one. That's how long it's been. So it's coming to a point that, and you know, Dan Campbell did mention this in the presser because, you know, they did ask him this question, you know, why are they doing this? Why are you putting Goff in these positions? He hasn't been able to live up to convert these plays from since week one. We watched it. They were 3-for-9. Now they're 3-for-10. Why are we continuing to do this? But the positive I'm taking from this is that, you know, unlike the last regime, Pencilhead, you know, Dan Campbell acknowledged that, you know, this is not working. You know, maybe in the future, maybe when we come in this situation again, maybe we don't go an empty back set, you know, and at least maybe try to at least give our running backs a chance to convert those short yardage plays. So we'll see how the Lions handle that in the future. But I mean, that's somewhat of a positive that he does acknowledge it and he's willing to correct it.
Yeah. No, you got to respect Dan Campbell's honesty. He mentioned that he wished that he huddled up for that last play. And I mentioned that in our last one, too. It's like they just rushed that play. It was 4th and 1, the biggest play of the game. And they didn't even talk about what they were going to run. They just said, okay, we're going to go for it. Fine. If you're going to go for it, you better be certain on what you are calling on this play. Because, like you mentioned, if you miss it, the game is essentially over unless you cause a turnover on defense, like on the first play. But your win probability goes from, I think it was like 11 or 12%, you know, with the 4th and 1, but it goes to like 2% if you miss it.
2%? That's what they gave it? They give it a 2% chance?
It was 2 or 1. I don't know what it was exactly.
I mean, it damn near was, is, I mean, that's like a, you know, here's a puncher's chance.
Exactly.
That's what that
yeah.
is. That's
it's
what
like,
that
it's
is.
Like, it's like fantasy football. Like when you're down by like 30 points, you're like, yeah, but I got my kicker. You know, we go into OT, he hits a couple 60 yarders. You know, we're in this.
Yeah, that's what that is. In realistically, this is 0% chance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it boils down to. Which, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Dan Campbell, he's aware of it, but you can't, because this is the thing with Jared Goff. I know a lot of people are putting the blame on Jared Goff and they're trying to wave it away from the coaching staff. And a lot of people are doing that. And it's easy to do that because Jared Goff is the quarterback. He's a guy who has a lot to prove and he hasn't proved anything yet. So he already has those people who's like, he's trash and this is why he's trash. And I get it. You know, the thing is with Jared Goff though, when he feels pressure, he panics. And that's what happened in the last play. There was a guy who was like near his kneecap because they rushed, they got through our offensive line and he just chucked the ball off.
Yeah.
He wasn't even worried about Cephas, who was right in front of him. But the point is the Lions coaching staff should know that by now. They should know Jared Goff by now. They should know his strengths and they should know his weaknesses by now. Hell, I'm at home and I know his strength and his weaknesses. So why the coaching staff will put Jared Goff in that situation? And I said this in the last episode. If this was Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, Patty Mahomes, you know, Josh Allen, shoot, do it. They're the best person. They're your best offensive weapon. They're your best person on the field. Put the ball in their hands and let them do it. Russell Wilson, put the ball in their hands. You don't. Jared Goff is not in that category, guys. We all know this. This is not nothing new. We all know Jared Goff is not in that category. Why are we putting the ball in his hands to do this? Now, I'm not saying that, oh, Jared Goff can't convert a play right in front of him with a 1st and 1. I'm not saying he can't. Because, I mean, who knows? The offensive line holds up. He has time in the pocket. Maybe he finds Cephas that's right in front of him. But what I'm saying is that you know his weakness. You know if he does get pressured, the ball could go anywhere. It could go anywhere. You don't know where the ball is going to go. It could go on the ground. It could go to the other team. When he's pressured, it could go anywhere. But you know this. You know his weakness. Why are you putting him in this situation?
I mean, the read itself to Amon-Ra St. Brown was even a bad read. I mean, he was open, too.
He was open.
It was just a bad throw.
He felt a little pressure and just chucked the ball. He chucked the ball really quick. I think it was like off his back foot. He didn't even get the set on the throw. He just saw pressure, freaked out, threw the ball.
I mean, like, yeah, I was going to say.
That's Jared Goff.
Yeah.
You know that's Jared Goff, though. Coaching staff know that already. They know his weakness. Oh man, he under pressure. He's not the greatest quarterback. Well, why put him in that situation? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's a good argument. I mean, I want to get into that 4th and 5 play that they went for early in the game. It was 4th and 5. We were down, I believe, 14-0 at that point.
Is that the mm-hmm. That was a pass to Swift, is that what you're talking about, in the goal line?
Yeah, got tipped by that linebacker. Swift would have had the touchdown if he didn't get tipped. But, like, did you like the idea of going for that 4th-and-5? A lot of people liked it. A lot of people didn't like it.
I didn't either. Again, this is a situation where, I mean, it's damned if you do or damned if you don't. If he converts in that play, everybody's like, yay, Dan Campbell's a hero. If he doesn't convert in a play, and you look at it, you're like, damn, maybe we should kick the field goal. Mm-hmm. So that play, I'm not putting too much fault on Dan Campbell. He's just an aggressive-ass coach. He's aggressive as hell. And he said it. I mean, it makes sense. He come from the Saints. The Saints are aggressive. But the difference is they have a team to be aggressive. That's true. You put in the ball on Drew Brees' hand. Okay, I don't care. I mean, if you can put the ball on Drew Brees' hand and tell him, hey, 4th-and-1, make a play. Do whatever you want to do, Drew Brees. He's going to cover. He's going to make the play. We can't do that to Jared Goff. Jared Goff doesn't have the talent around him, and he's just not there as a quarterback to have that type of faith in Jared Goff to say, okay, Jared Goff, go ahead and make a play. You can't do that to Jared Goff.
I mean, at that point of the game as well, you're down 14-0. It's still early in the game. It's still in the first half.
You can get the ball back second half. So,
that's what I'm saying. Like, don't you just take the points? And, like, your offense has definitely already struggled in the goal line. Like, you've already struggled in the red zone already. You had the miscommunication with Ragnar on Goff. It wasn't your first time in the red zone. You've struggled. And it wasn't like, you know, it was – you had three other attempts to punch it in. And if it's the 1-yard line, okay, fine, go for it. Yeah. But the 5?
Yeah. It's tough, man. And that's the thing. He's being a little bit too aggressive with a team that's not there talent-wise.
It's a point where there's aggressive and there's reckless. That's reckless.
that was. But, I mean, I kind of see what he was saying. I get his point of view. Like, look, if we don't get it, they're pinned on their 4-yard line. So we have them backwards. And then, you know, if they do get a stop, guess what? You already control field position. So
that's true. But, like, 4-yard line compared to the 1-yard line is still breathing room for an offense.
It is. But I believe that drive, they did get that stop that drive. The very next drive, that's when
it was in the first half. So they did get the stop. So it worked. This was where I was talking about that Aaron Glenn, I believe, play. Where he set the house on 3rd down. I think it was a 3-and-out, if I'm not mistaken, for the Bears.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it worked. I mean, they had good pitches. They just didn't score again. They got down there and didn't score again.
Yeah.
So it just.
I don't know. I feel like you're down in the game. You're in the ball at half. And I know that wasn't the last drive of the half. There's still time in the game. But I if I'm at the points where, like, we've had 3 other opportunities and you could even get me, like, to the 2-yard line, I mean, just take the points at that point. That's me.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I said. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. If he converts on that, you know. On, you know, in 5-yard line, they convert that fourth and 5 play. They get a touchdown. Everybody's praising Campbell on that play.
You're right.
But if he doesn't convert it, like right now, we're like, shit, why didn't you kick the 3? I mean, it's tough.
I mean,
I think you go, you could, that 4th and 5 play could go either way, depending how you're looking at it. If you believe your defense can get a stop and you could get field position, if you don't get it, then shoot, go for it, I guess. If not, I mean, kick the point, see what happens, you know?
Yeah. And like, I know hindsight's obviously always 20-20, right? It's always 20-20.
Yeah.
But I was, like, already even, like, initially, like, saying, like, man, I'll just take the points. But, like, you know, if you get the points, I'm not mentioning this right now. But like, you're right. Exactly. I'm not mentioning, oh, you know, that was a play we should take the field goal. No, you're right. I'm not mentioning it at all.
Yeah, you say, shit, great job, Campbell, for having cojones.
I wouldn't even acknowledge it, honestly.
You wouldn't acknowledge it?
If it came to it, I would probably switch my honest opinion. But I'm like, okay, but it worked out. So, you know, it is what it is. that's probably what my answer would have been. Okay. Yeah. I got an interesting question now.
Yes, sir.
I brought up this in essentially almost every post game now, but now we have more clarity on the situation. So I want to talk about our rookie, Penei Sewell. 7th overall for Penei Sewell. Kyle Menke from MLive on Saturday reported saying that Penei Sewell will likely move back to the right side once Taylor Decker returns off injured reserve, which will most likely not be this week. So it looks like it'll be another week of Penei Sewell at left tackle. But I'm just interested. You've seen Panesu at left tackle the first four games, and now that they're essentially making the decision once Decker's back, there's nothing he could do to solidify that left tackle, him being a left tackle, and that he's going back to the right side. What's your thoughts on that?
This is, you know what? If last week never happened, or you know, the last game never happened, I'll say, you know what? Maybe we should put Taylor Decker on the right side. Maybe. But what Penei Sewell did last week, or this week, or however you want to look at it, against the Bears, he struggled. I mean, this was definitely his worst performance as a rookie. Gave up 2 sacks, gave up 1 hit, 4 hurries, and 7 pressures. Just him alone. That's not the whole offense. 7 pressures on just him. He's a rookie, and he's going to go through things like this. I'm not saying he's supposed to be perfect. Taylor Decker might be your better option at left tackle right now. Maybe. I mean, Taylor Decker never had a game like this. I don't remember seeing a game like this from Taylor Decker in a very, 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 very long time. So I think if Taylor Decker is healthy, I don't see him ever getting a game like this. So, you know, maybe is probably best for the team. Because, honestly, Penei Sewell is a definitely upgrade over Matt Nelson. So this might, I mean, putting Taylor Decker back to his normal position, move Penei Sewell to the right side, might be the best case scenario for the offensive line right now. If last week never happened and Penei was playing perfect as a rookie, I'll say, shoot, you know, he might be, you know, right now he might be better option than Taylor Decker right now. But I just don't feel like that right now.
So I asked the question now, then, is like, why do we ever even stunt the growth of Penei Sewell? If he had no chance to do what he could do at left tackle, which he was really good the first 3 weeks, and obviously he had a rough week. I mean, it's Khalil Mack. I'm not going to give him a break. I'm not going to give him a pass, but it was a tough week.
It wasn't even Khalil Mack that was doing this. This was,
it was a mixture of everyone in that Bears defense. Like, Khalil Mack was part of it.
And no, as far as the pressures, it was all on, what's his name, though?
Leonard
Floyd.
Yeah.
He was murdering Penei Sewell all game.
But what I'm saying is like, whatever Penei Sewell did at left tackle, it seemed like it wasn't going to be good enough for him to keep the job. So I asked the question is, if he wasn't a long-term answer, and we were all in agreement that development and growth is more important than the win-loss record this year, why even move Penei Sewell? Why even move him to the left side?
It was the best option. You don't want to get Goff killed.
You know,
who are you gonna move there? Matt Nelson on his blind side.
That would have
been bad.
I understand.
That's
but
a
like,
death sentence. You're trying
like,
to get Goff killed.
Why are we? You know, in the whole offseason, we essentially drafted Penei Sewell to be the right tackle. Why are we stunting the growth and moving him to the left side?
I don't see that stunting his growth. I mean, Penei Sewell, the reason why I don't see that stunning his growth, Penei Sewell has a very long career ahead of him, okay? I think if he played right tackle for his first year, I don't think it's going to stun his growth if, you know, eventually he does become the better tackle than Taylor Decker. And then they move him, you know, they're able to either move Taylor Decker down the line and say, hey, look, you're going to be the future right tackle. I mean, left tackle and move Taylor Decker. I don't see it being a stun his growth. I mean, he's 20 years old. I don't see it being a big deal if he's getting, you know, those reps on the left side or on the right side. I don't see it being an issue. I think when it comes down to it, once they're able to put him back on the left side, I think he'll be playing at a top level. I don't think it's really stunning his growth down the line. But right now, you got to look at the situation. Who's going to be the better left tackle right now? Taylor Decker or Penei Sewell?
I would say Decker right now, right?
Yeah, right now you have to say Taylor Decker. He's a veteran. He was playing at a top 10 tackle level last year. So, I mean.
But I honestly don't care about right now. I'm caring about who has the higher potential. Penei Sewell, definitely.
I know that, but I mean, they want to be competitive, man.
You could still be competitive with Penei Sewell at left tackle, though.
You could be, but not as much as if you put the best people out there.
You could have a future All-Pro, maybe the best offensive tackle in the NFL at some point. You could, but why are we flip-flopping on each position? Why don't we just have him perfect one? Why are we making him a swing tackle, essentially, at this point?
He's 20 years old. So, I mean, I don't see, let's just say, I don't really see it being an issue that for his rookie year, play right tackle. I don't see it being an issue.
I don't mind him being a right tackle, but if the plan was to keep him at right tackle, why even move him at left?
Because that, you can't put Matt Nelson as your blindside tackle. I mean, that's just going to send Jared Goff to the ER, bro. And then if you put, and then after he goes to the ER, you're going to have David Blau out there. Then David Blau's going to go to the ER. Then you're just not going to have a quarterback. And then what?
like I'm saying is like, you got to do what's best for the long-term plan. And that's Penesul. He is your most prized
team. Trust me. He is the future plan of this team. All right. That's not going to change, though.
I know that. I know that doesn't change it. But like, why are we, like, why don't we just make this guy an all-pro? Put him in a.
He is going to. That's the thing. Like, I think people are feeling like
flip-flopping him. It's like wiping your ass right and left. We've mentioned this.
Guess
you,
what?
You perfect one. You don't do both.
I know, but it's not going to be like an. All right. So this is the way that a lot of people are looking at it. And I don't think it's that much of an issue. He learns right tackle. If he masters the right tackle position, he's not going to go to the left and be like, oh, shit, I don't know how to play left tackle. That's not going to happen.
But if he masters the right tackle position, why you would even move to the left at that point?
You still can because he's still your best tackle at that point. He's still going to be your best tackle.
But you want to put him in the best position. That's the main thing.
His best position will be eventually once he'll be left side. The thing is, they're going to cross-train him. Let him, you know, right now, even right now, he's practicing on the right side. He said he was, you know, he's preparing for Taylor Decker to return. He's practicing on the right side. So I think, you know, during this year, next year, you're gonna see both sides. So you're going to be trained both sides. And I don't see that being an issue. I look at this like being a boxer that can go southpaw or orthodox anytime during the fight. You know, they master both positions, both sides. They can go orthodox and they could go southpaw. So I don't really see this being an issue that's going to just say, okay, he's going to learn right tackle. He's going to completely forget how to play left tackle. He there's no chance of him being an all pro on the left tackle. I don't see that.
No, I'm fine. And I agree with that. But what I'm saying is they've said it's a significant difference in playing the left and right side.
It is. If you never did it before.
Yeah. And it comes to a point. It's like, why don't we just try to perfect one? Why are we trying to make him play both?
Because that's right now it's best for the team right now. I mean, I know you're thinking like this year doesn't matter, doesn't care. But
wins,
you look at
losses
coaching,
don't matter. I'm caring about more about the development more than wins losses.
I know you are.
That's how Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell should think this year too.
I mean, they're looking at the development too, but they don't like losing.
They don't. No one likes losing.
No one's
losing. But I'm saying is, what's more important this year, the win loss or the development?
Definitely the development. But,
exactly.
But this is the thing though. He's 20 years old. It's not going to be that much an issue if he plays right tackle his rookie year. It's not going to be an issue. What happened next year, all training camp, all offseason, he's left tackle. You don't think he could be an all-pro next year? Like, in down his career, when he's 25, 26, 27, you don't think he'll be an all-pro?
I do think he could be an all-pro, but I want him to perfect his position so he can be that all-pro.
The fact of the matter, he's going to be an all-pro. It's going to happen. Unless some freak injury happens, let me knock on some wood, he's going to be an all pro. Okay, he's going to be an all pro. And I just don't, he's just too young, right? He's so young right now that he's in a position to say, hey, right now we need you at right tackle, because if you're at right tackle, how much better are we, this team could be? I mean, and I know this year doesn't matter, but who knows? Maybe that improves our running game that much better. You know, you put him on the right side with Halepute Vatai, Frank Randall when he comes back. And then you have Penei Sewell. Just those three guys. Just run behind those three guys right there and just get 5 yards per carry.
And like I said, I don't care about him being a right tackle. I just hate now that we've seen what he could do at the left side. Like, why are we doing this flip-flopping? I would have just never moved him initially if the plan was always to put him back at right tackle. That's just me personally. And I know that I understand the blind side.
Yeah, because you can't put Matt Nelson. If you put Matt Nelson on your blind side, that's just...
We've done worse.
than Matt Nelson on the blind side?
In the past, I mean, I would say Greg Robinson was a lot worse than Matt Nelson.
Yeah, you will. That's a tackle.
I mean, we've done worse.
But, I mean, with Jared Goff, you don't. I mean, this is just, that was set up nothing but fumbles and bad stuff all year. or you could say for the first five games, if Matt Nelson was your blindside tackle, that would not have worked out good.
I don't know.
But I mean, like you know, the thing is, I get what you're saying, and but the thing is that he's just so young that I think he's not going to be an issue at all. I think he's still going to be that guy. I think that you put him on the right side this year. I think that he makes the offensive line better this year. And it comes to a point that they say, look, you know, you could be the left tackle now, or he's playing better than Decker in practice. And they say, look, you know, maybe you just explore, you know, trade options for Taylor Decker. Not this year. I'm talking about down the line.
No, not now. Yeah.
You know, down the line, you know, I think he could still be that guy. So that's why I'm not really worried about it too much. I mean, he's still playing tackle. And I get it. It's just it's different sides. But if he masters the right side, he'll be good on the left side.
We'll see. We will see as this trend goes on. We'll probably be asking the question every week as the season goes on. Because obviously this is, I think, our most prized possession on our football team is this guy.
Yes. Yeah. He's the most likely person to make the Hall of Fame on this team right now, I would have to say.
Say him or Ragnow. I'd say Ragnow. Yeah,
Ragnow's up there. I want to bring up something. And what's that? I just want your thoughts on, I mean, a lot of people are talking about it. The quarterback of this team, Jared Goff. How do you feel about Goff right now?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that was a knee slapper. I know.
I mean, again, you know, the perception and the opinion, it just hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. I mean, it's been the same since we acquired the guy. It's the same thing right now. I've never thought highly of Jared Goff since we have acquired him, and I haven't thought highly of him as the season gone on. I mean, this is what I expected. So, like, I'm not disappointed with Jared Goff. I'm not disappointed. I'm not impressed. He is what I thought he was. He's a bridge quarterback that will be the quarterback for this team for the rest of the season, and I think there's a high possibility he's the quarterback for 2022. But after that, he is not quarterbacking for the Detroit Lions. After that, I don't see anything longer than 2022. That is it. He's got 2 years. And his lease is up.
Yeah. I mean, like I said last week, so far, very underwhelming as far as what I've seen from Goff. Now, he has his moments. I'm not saying this guy is downright terrible or he's bad. I'm not saying that. He just has his moments. He has two flaws that are in his game that is haunting him. When one of the flaws is the pressures. When he feels pressure, he doesn't go through his reads. He panics and just chucks the ball up. And another thing is you know, finding, you know, having an eye on the field and just finding an open receiver. That has been his two flaws, and you know, it's been haunting him. Now again, he has his moments where he looked awesome, where Jared Goff looks awesome. And he even has some moments in the last game. If you literally go to yourself and say Jared Goff looked terrible all against the Bears.
No, he did not.
If you feel like that, you just don't like Jared Goff, and that's just what it is. You just don't like the quarterback. You just don't like the guy.
No, there was multiple times like, okay, Jared, I see you. Like him escaping that pop by that pocket and making that like that throw to Cephas, like you said.
Yeah.
That throw to Khalif Raymond, not the one that he missed, but yeah, the one that he made the touchdown. It was busted coverage, made a beautiful pass.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, he has his moments where he looked, where this season he looked good. But I'm gonna say this. And I hope, if one of the offensive coaches can just listen to his pod and just take it and maybe get in Anthony Lynn's ear, hopefully this works. But I'm just gonna say this. If Jared Goff is going to throw the ball 30 times or more with our offense, we won't win the game. I'm going to say that we would not win the game if Jared Goff throws the ball 30 or more times in a game with our offense. We would not win a game. I'm just going to go through his attempts. Game one, he threw the ball 57 times. Game two, he threw the ball 36 times. Game three, he threw the ball 30 times. And this last game, he threw the ball 38 times. If Jared Goff is throwing the ball 30 or more times with our offense, we would not win the game. I'm just going to say that this is not going to happen. We need, in order for this team to win a game, they got to go to the basics. They got to look at who are their three best weapons? TJ Hockenson, DeAndre Swift, and Jamal Williams. They're their best weapons right now. And I know that some young receivers are doing well. with the opportunities that are given to him. But these are your guys right here. These are, if this is Madden, these are the guys with the stars on, like, next to their name. These are your, these are your
superstars or X-Factors.
Your superstars. Yes, these are your guys right here.
Well, they're not X-Factors, but they're superstars.
Yes. So these guys, you need to find a way to increase these rushing attempts with Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, and you're letting them be the offense. And then guess what happens when that happens? Everything else opens up, guys. Everything else opens up. You will be able to find TJ Hawkinson down the field if our running game is going. You'll be able to find some busted coverage where our receivers get open if our running game is going. But these 8 attempts for our running backs, 8 attempts, 7 attemptsTwelve attempts, this is not going to happen. You got to make this. These are your guys, all right? And even on those 3rd-and-1 plays and 3rd-and-2 plays, you need to say, okay, we're going to go big, and we're going to get Jamal Williams back there. We're going to bring in Jason Kambinda as our lead back, as our fullback, and we're going to run the ball right down their throat and get this first down. That's the type of mindset this team has to have in order for us to win a goddamn game. If you're going to go into these games and say, okay, 3rd-and-2, we're going to go empty back in this play, go 4 wide receivers wide, and we're going to make Jared Goff make a play with a 5-man protection scheme where, shit, if he gets pressured, who knows what the fuck is going to happen. that's you got to get away from that mindset, because you're going with the 5-man protection, and you have Jared Goff as your quarterback. So if he does feel pressure, the play is dead. The play is over. The play is dead. So unless we want to go 0-17, they need to figure this shit out. And getting the ball to your superstar players, your X-Factors, you need to get the ball to these 3 guys.
Yeah. No, I think you got to go back to what McVay did with Jared Goff. I mean, and how he was able to win with Jared Goff. And it is what you just mentioned, you know, less attempts passing and really putting a serious implement of getting the run game going. And that's how Jared Goff going, because like you mentioned, it opens up the play action game. It opens up the passing game.
It's going to happen, man. Those big plays are going to come, but you just got to be patient with it. You can't have that mindset of, okay, big play, big play, big play, or check down. Run the ball. Make the defenses respect your running game, where they're saying, okay, they're running this rock. They're getting almost 5 yards per carry. Maybe we should stack the box. And then when they stack the box, guess what you can do at that point? Bootlegs. You know, do the play action, roll them out, and then you'll find those guys. You know, that's what Jared Goff did in 2018. But we're just not running the ball enough to even get the opportunity to see a, you know, stacked box.
Yeah.
So this is, if Jared Goff is throwing the ball 30 times a game, not going to happen. You need to lower it to at least, you know, 20 to 25 times max. 20 to 25 times max. And then just run the goddamn, look what the Bears did to us last week. How many times did Justin Fields throw the ball? He threw the ball 17 times.
Yeah.
He has 17 attempts. I mean, and just look what they did. Look how they were able to put 24 points with Justin Fields only throwing the ball 17. He was 11 for 17. He completed 11 passes, guys. I just don't see us winning with Jared Goff throwing the ball that many times. This is not going
to
happen.
And go back to your original question of, what's your thoughts on Jared Goff? Like, you could obviously win games with Jared Goff. I don't think that's the problem. I think the thing is, though, I just don't look at him as a franchise quarterback, just because there's so many things you have to cater to his success for him to have success. And I know it's hard to get franchise quarterbacks who could carry you. I know you don't get Josh Allen, you don't get Stafford, you don't get Mahomes just coming around. But I'm willing to take that chance in trying to find a quarterback who could carry a little bit more, rather than just, you know, try to cater completely where I have to limit his attempts and basically get a Jimmy Garoppolo or a Jared Goff, or, you know, I want something more than that.
I mean, you got to look at it this way. Justin Fields was a first-round pick last year, right? He went with 11th overall.
Yeah.
What are the Bears doing with him?
I mean, this is only his second game as NFL pro, so I think that could change as, you know, the games go on and his career progresses. I think he could become more of a guy that could take over. It's still really early, so I can't but right now, yeah, you're right. But I can't compare Justin Fields and Jared Goff, who has been in the league since 2016, to a guy who's getting his second career start.
I get you. I'm just comparing, I guess, like the rookie aspect that you saying that, you know, you rather take a chance at rookie. But if you brought a rookie, you'd be doing the same shit right now.
You'd have to.
Absolutely. Unless you get Mac Jones, who's a complete stud, by the way.
No. I understand your point. Absolutely. I'm not saying, like, this year, if they got a rookie quarterback or if it was Jared Goff, I agree. The game plan should be what you're offering right now. But I'm saying in the long run, this is what Jared Goff is, man. You need to cater an offense around him. He's making the same mistakes. He's showing the same flashes he's always shown. And that's the problem with Jared Goff. It's just not consistent enough for me to believe he's a franchise quarterback.
I mean, I'll say this, man. There's so many NFL quarterbacks are like that. And so many guys who are
multiple guys like that.
Like, I'm gonna give you a big name right now. Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill is that the quarterback that you talk that has to be catered.
You could even say Baker Mayfield.
I mean, of course. I mean, look what Baker Mayfield has.
Kirk Cousins.
There's a lot of quarterbacks like that. So it's not really a big knock. I mean, it kind of is. But you could, like you said, you could still win with Jared Goff. It's not impossible to win or possibly go to the playoffs with Jared Goff.
Absolutely.
But we got to have a running game. If you're not running the ball enough, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just look at the trends in the NFL now. Of teams that make the NFC Championship, teams that make the AFC Championship. I would say especially in the last 3 to 4 years, which it's coming more of today's NFL, you need a quarterback who could take over. I mean, just look at who were all the quarterbacks in the championship game last year. So we had, it was in the AFC. It was Chiefs versus...
Was it the Titans?
No, that was the year before.
Oh, okay.
Who did they play? It wasn't the Bills.
Don't ask me.
Okay, well, regardless, let's look at the NFC. It was Packers versus Bucks, Brady Rodgers. Like you just, it comes, I think it was Bills. Was it Bills? I'm pretty sure it was Bills. Bills Chiefs, I believe.
You think the Bills did the Bills go to the AFC Championships?
Let's look at this. I am very curious now.
They probably did.
I think it was the Bills, but I just want to look up the.
That'd be interesting because they play next week. That'd be very interesting if that was the matchup. That'd be like a rematch.
2020 AFC Championship. Or I should look at 2021 because it's technically 2021. Bills and Chiefs. Yep.
Wow. Okay. So this is so this week they kind of know they play each other. So this is a rematch.
That's a good
interesting.
Matchup.
Interesting.
Yeah, but like that's my point. It's like I feel like we're getting to that trend. Like you need that elite quarterback or a very good quarterback to be in those championship games where they can just kind of take over. And like you can win, obviously. Like we've seen the Joe Flaccos, we've seen the Nick Foles. Win a Super Bowl before, and Jared Goff himself has gone to a Super Bowl and could have won a Super Bowl. It's just, it's a lot more difficult, obviously, but it's very difficult to find the quarterback. So I'm not trying to make it sound as complex as it is. You're just going to find an elite quarterback. It's not as easy as it sounds.
No, it's very not as easy as it sounds. Just ask those Miami Dolphins. They know about how hard it is to win a franchise quarterback.
Ask the Chicago Bears. Ask a couple, you know, 4-hour drive if you want to ask Bears fans. And they have never been able to get a quarterback.
Yeah, and they're hoping Justin Fields is it.
Yeah.
So it's
they're really banking on it.
It's not easy.
I don't know. I'm just not a Jared Goff guy.
I mean, it sucks because, you know, he hasn't proved it. He hasn't proved it, you know, and you would think that second opportunity, you know, the Rams didn't want him. He should have a chip on his shoulder. You would think that, shit, let me show you why I was the number one overall pick. You would think that he had that mindset, but it just hasn't been there, man. It's tough, but I don't know. Right now, you just got to have faith in the coaching staff that they're seeing his flaws. I mean, everybody sees it. They're seeing his flaws. Hopefully, they can do their best to mask his flaws or maybe overcome his flaws. I don't know. He's only 26, so it's not like it's impossible.
Is it me or I just don't think the NFL IQ is all that? I don't think the NFL IQ is all that crazy. I think he just makes so many dumb mistakes. You saw with the Frank Ragnow play. The miscommunication, you see the missed throws. I don't know.
I personally don't put any of those fumbles on Jared Goff.
You don't?
No.
He put the blame on himself. I mean,
he did.
A good teammate. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. You're not gonna. Last thing, he's not gonna put Frank Ryan throw him under the bus.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But it was just a miscommunication. He was calling his protection. The stadium was loud. Frank Ryan probably heard hike.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's on Frank Ragnow. And then the other strip sack he took, I put that on Anthony Lynn. I put that solely on Anthony Lynn. And the reason why I say that is because why the hell would you go with a 5-man protection set with an empty backfield against the Bears front four? Why the hell would you do that?
And that was without Ragnow at that point, wasn't it?
That was without Frank Ragnow.
That was with Evan Brown
so
at center.
All they did is beat Penei Sewell, got beat. Before Jared Goff had to do anything, he got strip sacked. Again, I don't put that on Jared Goff either. I put that on Anthony Lynn for calling such an idiotic call. Now, Anthony Lynn, I liked what he's been doing as far as...
He's been more good than bad.
Yeah, he's very creative with his play calling, which is awesome. I love it. You know, we haven't seen creativity in our offense in a very long time. So I'm not knocking Anthony Lynn, but I just think some of these plays and play calls and personnel that he has out there sometimes on these short yardage plays.
Especially the short yardage situations.
Yeah, it just hasn't been ideal. And also with, you know, going away from the running game quickly in probably all the games, you could say hasn't been ideal either. But as far as like the type of plays he's calling, awesome. I love it.
I mean, he's been creative. I've loved the way he's used Khalif Raymond, a guy who's like a gadget player. I think he's used him very uniquely, and it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, maybe when you see more screens for Khalif Raymond, because it's like when he gets a screen, it's like almost automatic 10 yards.
When they do that little play, yeah, I mean, it's automatic like 12 yards, and it seems like he could break it. If he, it seems like that play could break big, even bigger.
The screen, the end around play that they do with him, I mean, it's very, I like what he's doing, but it's just those plays like that I just mentioned. You going to empty backfield against the Bears on a third down play, like just shit like that is just like, come on, you know, you gotta do better.
All right, let's get into the oopsie doopsie and ball of the week. This is damn near coming to your award now, because Peter's not joining us for these post game pods anymore. So this is damn near your award now.
He's like, I already talked about a game once already. I don't want to talk about this Bear game again. God damn it.
We love you, Pierre.
Now Pierre is busy right now, and that's why he couldn't join us. Hopefully, I mean, no, he won't be able to join us next week either. But you know, he'll come through some, you know, one week.
Back soon. But as of right now, this is going back to Malcolm's award. Malcolm, who is your baller of the week? Who balled out this week?
Shit. I'm gonna give it to Jamal Williams. And
good one.
Yeah, I mean, Jamal Williams was a bright spot of our offense, even though they went away from him. But he was a guy that, like, early in the game, you're like, wow, what a running back. You know, he was breaking tackles and just getting, you know, he damn near averaging 5 yards per carry. You know, he had 14 attempts, 66 yards, but he didn't have any touchdowns. And it looked like in the goal line, they went away from him. I don't know why. That's another thing that they probably got to fix. But he's a guy that he was definitely hot. If I had to say somebody was hot, I would say it was Jamal Williams.
If I had to give a co-one, I know this is not my award. I was actually going to give it to Charles Harris, man. I've been really impressed with Charles Harris so far in this season. I like him a lot. I think he's been a nice story for the Detroit Lions team so far. And he was a guy when they brought in the offseason, former first-round pick. He was another one with a chip on his shoulder. What could he do in the situation? He had an uphill climb to make this football team, makes the football team, has a good camp, has a good preseason, makes the football team. And I think just made a nice impact in this football team once, you know, when he's activated and, you know, been on the field. I think he's just been a nice difference maker on defense. I've liked him a lot, honestly. And now with Romeo Okwara out, I mean, you would assume he obviously would get more snaps. He's already been getting a lot of snaps, no Flowers, but I assume that even increases a little bit more now with no Romeo Okwara.
All right. Yeah, I agree.
Let's get into the oopsie doopsie of the week. Mr. Krabs, take it away.
Boo-hoo. Let me play a sad song for you on the world's smallest violin.
All right, now for today's oopsie doopsie, it's gonna go to the coaching staff. It's gonna go to Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell.
I just thought there's aggressive and there's reckless. I thought there was a little too much reckless in this game. And I love the aggressive. I'll take aggressive over conservative any day. So I'm not knocking the aggressiveness, but there's a point where you just got to take points sometimes, man. Points are points in the NFL. You just got to take points sometimes in the NFL. So I'm giving it to Dan Campbell. I think it's fair criticism. I think Lions fans have been very fair and unfair. Some have been very fair, some have been very unfair. Some people calling for his job, very unfair. But some people giving criticism and, you know, saying that this is a problem right now and that this could be fixed, that's fair criticism, in my opinion. He deserves that right now. I think the whole coaching staff deserves that. And I think we harped on those issues all episode. Nobody here is calling for Dan Campbell's job. Nobody's saying that.
No. There's a lot of room for improvement.
There's a lot of room for improvement right now, though.
Yeah, I think he's doing a phenomenal job, man. I mean, this is his first time as a full-time head coach. I think he's doing a great job, especially, you know, as far as him answering questions. So far, the best coach answering questions, you know, as the Lions coach. You know, he's very honest.
Yeah.
Very honest. He'll tell you as it is. You don't shy away from anything. It just is what it is. And he's also not afraid to admit to his mistakes.
Yeah.
And know how to, you know, try to fix it. You know, so that's also a really good thing about him that, you know, that I'm excited about. But yeah, this game, it was just he just got out coached. He got out coached this game, and this is he knows it. He said it in the presser. You know, they got out coached, all of them, not just him, all of them.
Yep.
AG, yep. Anthony Lynn, they all got out coached this game. So this wasn't their best performance, and this is why, you know, the last episode I was so upset because I was like, shit, you know, this was like the worst game I've seen from them this year, and this is what it is. This really was the worst coaching game that I've seen from them this year. You know, they didn't come in there with a real – I don't think they had a real game plan. What the hell was their game plan this week?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know what their game plan was this week.
Yeah.
I don't know. You would think it was to pressure him, to pressure Justin Fields. They couldn't get the pressure there. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it, guys. Hope you guys all enjoyed this episode of the Pride Podcast.
Yep.
Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And
yep.
It's always much appreciated. And we will be back later this week with a Vikings preview with our guy from Blue Wire from Purple Insider, Matthew Kyler. He'll be joining us on the pod on Wednesday, so I'm excited for that.
Yep.
So, with that, I'm out, guys. Peace.
All right, y'all. It's your boy, Malcolm. And like Tyron said, leave those reviews. And I am out. Peace.